If you have the gold prayer book, please turn to page 34. And if you have the white binder, then turn to the first page titled Kadampa Center Prayers. And we'll start with by chanting Shakyamuni Buddha's mantra three times. Shanti Latimer? Well, and while we're chanting, please think of Shanti Latimer, who has been a member of the Kadampa Center for many years, active member of the Kadampa Center prison project also, and she passed away at 5 o'clock last night.
She's been sick a long time. She's been sick, every year kind of dying, but,
she was diagnosed with cancer in 2007. For the Medicine Buddha stanza and mantra, if you have the white binder, it's on the blue sheet. Okay, so, Bhagawan with equal compassion for all, whose name when merely heard dispels the suffering of the lower realms, dispeller of disease and the three poisons, I prostrate to Medicine Buddha, lapis light. Teyata om bekanze bekanze maha bekanze bekanze raja samugate soha teyata om bekanze bekanze maha bekanze bekanze raja samugate soha teyata om bekanze bekanze maha bekanze bekanze raja samugate soha Teyata om bekanze bekanze maha bekanze bekanze raja samugate soha Teyata om bekanze bekanze maha bekanze bekanze raja samugate soha Teyata om bekanze bekanze maha bekanze bekanze Raja samugate soha teyata om bekanze bekanze maha bekanze bekanze Raja samugate soha.
This is the mantra we just recite. Mantra we just recite is called like Medicine Buddha mantra. It's like healing practice. Healing practice, you know, there's no, in Buddhism it's called healing practice. So you see here the image there, right after the Buddha, so there's no medicine Buddha. So long time ago, probably more than now, 25 years ago, so I was in Switzerland. So one of my friends, she does no color therapy. So at that time I have no clue. I thought that's like kind of like funny, very funny. So I have no idea how she, but she does have like patients, clients to come and probably pay quite a bit of money. So I thought maybe so. And I went to her practice and there's just colors in small bottle. Hundreds of different colors, and I'm not sure she talked to patients looking at the colors and this. And I'm not sure, it's called color therapy. So you heard color therapy? How it works?
Like they found that people who were if I'm very drunk and angry, the police put them in a room that's painted pink, and it calms them down.
Oh, that's very interesting. They only work for the drunk people?
No.
If they only work for drunk people, so maybe I start to drink something. maybe I'll get drunk very easily, maybe just in one sip. I never drink, so in one sip I'll get drunk. Anyway, so according to Tibetan medicine, you know, Tibetan medicine practice, which is like at least like 900 years of history, or maybe more, I don't remember. But the medical books usually describes like imbalance of inner element. So that's why this, you know, cause like physical difficulties, and very much related to the mindset. So that so every Tibetan physicians who like did like who learned Tibetan medicines, so that this healing practice is a part of their practice. Before they see patients, they do healing practice before they see patients. So their diagnosis is very much done with, you know, like pulse, how is it, pulse, then like they test urines and tell what kind of problem. Just looking at, I'm not sure how they do, looking at the color of the urines, then they can tell what is the problem inside. And all the medicines purely made out of earth. So the medicine Buddha is like bright blue color, bright blue or dark blue. But it's like, it means dark blue, it has to be bright. You know, it's not just, how you say, it has to be bright. You know? Sometimes they put too much dark there, but you can hardly see. It's like, and also I heard like people do wear this like lepus loosely, they wear lepus loosely, that's the stone, they wear, somehow it helps them. So anyway, so just for the sake of knowledge, if you wonder what kind of mantra we're reciting, that we are reciting this called Medicine Buddha Mantra, this is the healing mantra. So then you visualize, you know, you visualize, if you can, you visualize Medicine Buddha on your crown. On your crown? Yeah. Or on your crown, you visualize. You know? So then usually, you know, also said, you know, so of course that's the, in the West, the color therapies, you know, the people know about color therapy. You can visualize bright dark blue colors above your head. So they symbolize the healing energies. So then while you recite the mantras, then you are supposed to visualize that as a energy flow from that, you know, traditionally you visualize Medicine Buddha, so then energy flow, so then as a then eliminate all the physical difficulties, and together with, you know, this what is called like difficulty caused by mindset, you know, disturbing thought. Then also, you know, kind of like heal. Purifies or heal, okay. So actually there are no seven different healing Buddhas, you know, healing image, seven Buddhas are healing. So three of them is yellow color, then there's one is orange, then one is red. Then one is like three yellows, then orange. Then three yellow, then orange, that's four. So then it's like the red, like red, white. What is it? Red, white, pink? Maybe it could be pink, I'm not sure. It's red, white. Karma. then the blue. So you are supposed to visualize all of them, you know, first visualize dark blue, then above that, red, then white red, then the orange, then there's three yellow. So then while through your spiritual healing practice, then each figure dissolve into next one, then dissolve, then everything, all that dissolve into the blue color or Meditation Buddha. So then that blue color dissolve into you. So then it's kind of like heals like that. Okay. So just for the sake of knowledge, if you wonder what kind of mantra we're reciting, so so that's what is, you know, healing practice. Okay, healing practice. Yeah. Did the quantity? Yeah. Sorry. So if interrupt. So just want to say.
So let's read the four immeasurables three times in English. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the cause of suffering. May all sentient beings separate from the happiness is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. I turn to page 37. And at the bottom of the page in the Gold Prayer Book, there are two mantras. So let's chant Chenrezig's mantra 8 times. He is the Buddha of great compassion. And then Green Tower's mantra 7 times. She's the deity of enlightened activity. Om Mani Padme Hum. 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 Om Mani Padme
Hum. The mantra you see here, like this, you know, this is called six syllable mantra. Sometimes you see 7 syllables, so that the last one should not be there. So, but you know, sometimes you see 7, it should actually, this is called 6 syllable mantra. That's the mantra of compassion, to develop compassion. You know, compassion is important because it heals you and it heals everybody. Nobody argues about compassion, so yeah, just, you know. There's argument about religious religions, you know, there's argument about politics, there's argument about different culture, different tradition, but nobody, including animals, nobody argues about compassion. So this mantra is supposed to help you to develop compassion. That's called mantra of compassion. Actually, it's like 6-syllable mantras, or 6-syllable mantras, for the sake of knowledge, okay, mantra of compassion. So this one, and the same does there's some that's outside before you go to the stupa. We put it there to help people who come to the Kadamba centers, and we also build the stupa, you know, so that stupa contain many relics. So especially for the kids, you know, kids could go around, and just going around, it purifies so much negative karma, and you create this unique merit. It's not just merit, it's unique merit called Parvacharya Geza. So merit that similar to liberations, moksha, that means complete freedom from all the problems. liberations. So you create the merit going around the stupa and purify so much negative karma. Oh, so that's why we build stupa here to help people who come to Kandama Center, even though you can't sit down or maybe not able to say a lot of prayers and mantra, it's okay. You can just go around the stupa. You can bring your pet. If you want to help them, you can bring the pet. So they create this very special merit. It's called Parvachati Gesa. So that merit is not going to disappear. So when time comes, that merit becomes the cause for your liberations, your freedom from all the problems. So then this, you know, prayer will this contain probably millions of mantras, millions of money mantras. So when you turn, when you are supposed to think something positive, you know, to benefit, then you visualize light emitted from this well, and that light that touch other, then instantaneously liberate them from problems. That's kind of mindset you should have when you turn the prayer wheel. So then you get immense benefit. You get immense benefit. Okay, so for the sake of knowledge.
And now the Green Towers mantra?
Now the six syllable mantra. So we, in Tibetan tradition, we don't have a special class for kids to teach how to be spiritual. How is it spiritual?
Yeah.
Spiritual. We don't have class. The kids learn from their parents. Now every single Tibetan, probably from young to all the way up, they know this mantra, they know these mantras. And they know how to drink butter tea too. They know these mantras. We don't have class. We teach them. They just learn. Every single Tibetan knows this mantra. Does not mean they know the meaning, but they know how to say the mantra. So there's, you know, So I think therefore that the culture is deeply rooted in compassion. Culture is deeply rooted in compassion. No? So every Tibetan person is able to say this mantra. No? And the, especially in the lay communities, they don't know much practice. Even though Buddhism is very vast and deep, they only know this mantra, so they just recite this mantra. So let me tell you one story. Because my mom, she's always, you know, very talkative. She's like, she likes to gossip about other people. my father is very quiet, hardly talk. You can sit with him like hours and hours, he won't say even a word. You know? Then sometimes you get upset because he's not talking. Sometimes when you're with your mom, you get upset because she's talking too much. No matter what, there's always something. So we even know that both of them are not educated, so what they do for living is like they build the road and they big piece of stone, they make it like gravel by hand and hammer all day long. So then they like measure by bucket how much you can make. So then based on that one bucket, then you probably get like 50 cents or something like that. That's how they make their living, so then to raise all the kids. So when they come down, even if everybody gets back to the home, so then my father, he just sit, like, we have small room, there's like bedroom, living room, everything. There's, so then he sit, there's, you know, in the winter it's very cold, so we have this built out of like oil can, tin. Then we built, then my father built, and that's where you make fires, so it keeps kind of room warm. So he sit there, you know, when you come up, come back from work, then he just sit there. Just sit like this, and he won't talk, he just sit there. It kind of really irritated my mother. And she says, no. She tells him, why you sit like donkey, do nothing. And my father won't say anything. Then she says again, don't you hear what I said? Grab your mala, say some money mantra. Then my mom tells him, don't sit like donkey, just grab your mala, then do some mantra. Then probably is getting up here now, you know, one time, two times. Now his patience is running out. Then he tells, and he says, I don't recite mantra like you do, but I don't criticize people like you do. then he don't say anything. So I, deep down in my mind, I said, whatever he said, that's really correct. But I don't say anything, so I don't get clarified. So actually, this mantra is for denial of compassion. At least,
Okay, so Green Tower's mantra 7 times. Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re Soha. 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 Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re Soha.
So the mantra that we just recited, that's called Tara mantra, that's like 10-syllable mantra, 10-syllable mantra. So meaning, you know, the meaning of the mantra is not just something that you say again and again, then it becomes mantra. It doesn't become mantra, you know. So it, of course the mantra you said again and again, but saying something again and again doesn't become mantra. So mantra has definitions. The definition of mantra is to protect your mind, protect your mind. Definition of mantra is to protect your mind. So there's many different mantras. So then in the once a while people ask me, you know, what kind of practice I should do. I suggest them to do something simple. No, Tara mantra or recite 21 Tara praises. That's easy to do. even though there's there's probably thousands of different practices in that's in the Buddhism. Simply, you can't do all of them. It's too many of them there. So maybe it's better to do something simple. There's something you can do. So you see here, these all the Tara statues that we invited from Nepal. So to help, you know, and also all of these teachings. So as a Buddhist, I believe so. Just seeing the holy image will help. You know, people. I'm not sure how much help the people receive by my Mickey Mouse talk. Yeah, but I'm 100% sure seeing all this image and all this text, so you will get positive imprint. Even though you are angry, with angry mind looking at the holy object, you still get benefit. Of the image. So that's my belief. That's what I believe. So then each time when you come here center, so you see all of this, so then I leave center with some kind of like joy in my heart that everybody saw now all this holy image, you know, all the holy image. You know? So that's why we have this all the holy image. Then 21 Tara starts here, Lama Atisha. So you make karmic connection with the holy image. You know? Even like with the angry mind, when you look at the holy image, you still get. It's not just Buddhist holy image, any holy image. You look at them with an angry mindset, you still get benefit. Then, you know, see some person who's always kind, always generous, so caring, so loving. When you see that person, it kind of like makes you happy. We don't need to say any word, you know, just call what you call like Tibetan is called Tong Chol, means you just liberated, you are liberated, not like liberated from samsara, but you know, you are liberated, but just liberated by just seeing, that's all. Tong Cho. So that body is called Tong Chol Ku, means the body that is able to liberate someone who just seeing that body. Make sense? Seeing that body, Tong Cho Ku. That's what happens when you enlighten. So you don't need to say much. People are so happy just to see you. They're just happy to see you. You don't have to say anything. They're just so happy to see you. Well, there's the power of merit that you just liberate people from sorrow, because of your appearances, just liberate them. You know? Then we also do say, "Oh, I'm so happy to see you." I'm not sure what it really means. It really means like sometimes, like all the time. But people do say, "Oh, so happy to see you." You know, and people get so excited to see somebody, so happy to see, have tears. That's body, that's called Tong Chou. So that's once you enlighten, you know, so then your body, whole body become like that. Okay. So then, you know, once in a while, people ask me, "Oh, Gisela, what kind of practice I should do?" I usually suggest them do para practice. There's 21 of them, but mantra is so easy to learn. So then the phrase is not that difficult to say, and there's short one, there's 5-line one, easy to say. But it serves, there's 21 of them. There's reason why there's 21, because each serves for different purpose. Oh, anxiety, fear, nightmare, all of that. So, but I'm not sure how many American people believe. I'm not sure. Oh, how many you believe, so I'm not sure. So there's the Tara Mantra, so, you know, and we do have Tara, you know, like kind of like practice, like once every 2 months, once every month, you know, then if you would like to join, so then please join. So then doing here any practice, it kind of like change the environment. Environment, you know, so then it becomes more powerful. As a group, it's more powerful. So then, this center is dedicated, you know, to, we all get together here, then learn how to be kind to each other, you know. So even though you have faith in Buddhism, or I myself have faith in Buddhism, but same time, should have respect to all the religions. You don't, even though you don't have faith, but you should have respect. You should have respect. All these major religion traditions benefited millions of people in the past, is still benefiting now, is going to be benefit in the future. So therefore, we should have respect to all the major religious traditions. But as a Buddhist, I have faith in Buddhism, you know, but, you know, trying to also have respect. So that the bottom line, all this practice is to, how you say, to what we have Buddha nature, or Buddha nature, because everybody has potential to become enlightened, or Buddha natures. So need to nurture that, or undiscover. Become goal. Is better human being. So, I think our board of directors, yesterday came to see me. She asked, "What's your future goal for Kadampa?" I said, "Compassion. That's my goal. Kindness, love, equanimity. Not necessarily Buddhist. If Kadampa is thinking about how many people we can convert to Buddhism." For my personal view, that's not the goal. The goal is how many people become kinder, loving, caring. So then you feel that you did something for humanity. Betterment of humanity, you did something. Everybody enjoys, regardless, Christian, Buddhist, non-Buddhist, believer, not believer, animal, dog, squirrel in the backyard. Everybody enjoys. If you're kind, everybody enjoys. That's good. So then you can say, what do you practice? I practice compassion. I practice loving kindness. So, then it's good. Then your existence has some meaning. That your existence has some meaning. Some meaning. Then your existence has meaning. So then you could say my existence on this planet is very precious. Precious. So because I embrace loving kindness, compassion, equanimity, respect, tolerance. So then you live your life really well. So then if something goes on, nothing to worry. Because every action matters, nothing to worry. So then 21 Tara, practice also helps, benefits you. So for the second world, I just want to share. So then I told her, that's my vision of Kadamba Center. It's been my visions almost now 20 years ago. It's still my visions. So then to grow and to be there for each other. Be kind to each other. Then doesn't matter if you believe in something or not believe in something, doesn't matter, if you be kind to each other. So that's the most important thing. Because everybody likes to be loved, including yourself. That love is something that we can develop based on reason. So then the most obstacle is not like oh, you don't believe in anything. That's not most obstacles. Biggest obstacles. It's not, because you don't believe in anything. That's not the biggest obstacle. The biggest obstacle is disturbing thought. That's the biggest obstacle, disturbing thought. So, so being mindful about disturbing thought, and also needs to be more mindful about the cause of problems. Of course, there's problems. I have problems, you have problems, everybody's problem. But it's caused by what? Mainly it's caused by mind. So different kind of mindset. And perceptions. Not just perception and projections. You have perceptions about something, then you project. And not just that, so we like just perception, that's okay, but not just perception, but you, how do you say, believe. Maybe better say I. Believe, for example, taking shower is very important. So that story is related to my father. I have a couple of siblings who live different part of the world. My father came here, now he's old papa, so came here. Each time when the children call him, then every one of them tells him, take shower. And he really don't want to take shower. Somehow he does not want. He only takes shower according to his schedule. So that's your perception, then you project, it's so important because then blah 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 hell or whatever. So then you force that idea into somebody who doesn't want to take shower. So then he gets so upset, he says, don't you have something else to say rather than shower? I don't want to take shower, I'm not fish. Right? You think I'm fish? If you are fish, then you want to go into the water all the time. I'm not fish, and it's not here. But it's kind of complicated things, because it's the perception and projections, then force into somebody's life. What do you do? So, and he likes to drink. He drinks. I tell him, I'll buy you beer if you take shower. He will not take shower for beer. finally, I just give up. So, in my hometown, what happened, you take shower, it's very complicated. Taking shower is very complicated. It's not easy. You have to build the fire, you have to heat up the water. Then, there's like whole, like, it takes a lot of energy and time. And, usually the mother is the one who does all of that. People in my hometown, they take shower New Year Eve once a year. That's it. New Year Eve, then everybody takes shower. Then it's too cold. Nobody takes showers. We have like water outside, but nobody takes showers there. Only once a year. So therefore, their clothes is kind of shiny. Out of like clothes got dirt. The kids go like this. It's kind of built like whole layers, it's kind of, you can try this called make sound like wood, like that, all like built up. So that, not changing clothes 3 days, every 3 days change clothes, no, you just wear same clothes every day. And then New Year, then you get new clothes. Then everybody takes shower. There's a lot of work for mothers. The kids take shower, then they make up fires, all kind of things. So that's habit he built. He only takes shower during the daytime. Then he go outside, then he does all kinds of things with his finger and all of that. That's what, then he don't take shower in the morning at all. He don't take shower. And I telling him, here you can take hot shower anytime, but he won't take. Only drink. So that's like, the perceptions, then believing that, then projecting that, then forcing that into somebody else and people. You may have positive motivation, but sometimes you have to be mindful, even though you are telling something right things, but other person don't appreciate, so then you can. Then it's getting complicated. It's better to give it up. And better to give it less complicated. Better to give it up. So the disturbing thought is the biggest obstacles. So that something needs to be considered very seriously. How to stop them, how to minimize them is very, very important. So probably going to read from the books. Okay, so yesterday, last Sunday, not able to read much. So today here, if you have the book, so this is called 7-point mind training text. Okay, 7-point mind training text. So the mind or the thought needs to be trained or tamed, so control. So whatever you call control. So today here, the section, Ramula, you have like books in English? In English? Anybody has books in English? 7-point? It's okay. So it's called like, maybe I'll try to translate with my broken English. Jowashide tabjichos. Tab is the method. Chok is the best method. So Jowashi, what is called Jowashi, is the maybe, you could say four different types of practice. And while I explain, then also I may ask questions. What do you think? I may ask questions. Four practice, which are the best method. Jowashi de tabjicho. So among those four practice, which is in the text, it says is the best method for achieving happiness, best method. Didn't say in the word, but that's what it's for. It didn't say the best method for achieving happiness, but that's the happiness is the goal. or you could say freedom. So here, when we say happiness, you know, it's not like excitement that you jump up, oh, like so happy, you know, like not that kind of happiness. You know, it's very deep, it's much deep. Not that kind of the excitement, or it's nothing to do with excitement. It's like kind of deep, and you feel. Jawashide tabji choso, the best method to achieving happiness of this fourth practice. So first one, so now we talk about this, okay, we discuss. What is the cause? What is the cause for happiness? What is the cause for physical happiness? What is the cause for physical happiness? Or you could say joy, happiness, pleasure, whatever you call it. What is the cause for physical pleasure, physical happiness, physical joy? What is the cause? The same applies to mental. What is the cause for mental joy, mental pleasure, mental happiness? What is the cause? So, what is it? So then based on that probably you can explain this fast practice or enjoy the enjoy. Do you mind to say something? Or it's not the how is it mandatory. I'm not pressing you. How is it pressing?
Pushing.
I'm not pushing you to say something, but if you want to share, then please do. What is the cause? Or maybe there's no cause. Well, if there's no cause, but then it gets more complicated. If there's no cause, then it gets more complicated. Yeah, Andre, please.
Yeah. I'm sorry, guys. I seem like I always got something to say. So I apologize for that. And I don't want to confuse things, but I was really thinking about last week, we were talking about this. We were talking about physical happiness. And I don't think there's really such thing as physical happiness. I think happiness is a mental state. And so if our bodies aren't feeling pain, if we don't experience loss or we know how to experience loss in a way that doesn't bring us down, I think that is the cause for happiness. But it's a mental state. It's not a physical state. The body itself doesn't get happy. You know, the body can feel comfort. The body can feel relaxed, and all of that. And I think from that, then we achieve this mental state of happiness. I kept thinking about this, and I'm thinking, I don't think the body goes, I'm happier, or anything like that, right? You know, it's like, but when we have, let's say that we have, the physical comforts, if we have food, clothing, shelter, and we have people in our lives, and we have these kinds of things. Then we have happiness. When we use the body to serve others, then we find happiness in that. So this is what I was thinking. So again, I don't want to confuse the issue, but
Andre, you think like physical and body is the same thing or different? Is physical bigger than body?
Well, I think physical and body is the same thing because physical is material, right? It's matter. So I think this body, right, is material.
When you see something beautiful, do you get pleasure?
I do. When I see the images of the Buddha, it gives me pleasure.
Is that physical or mental?
I think that's mental.
Oh.
Yeah, I think happiness itself is a mental state. I remember a few years ago when after my
can you get, if you don't see the image, can you get instant happiness?
If you don't see the image,
yeah,
you can, but then the happiness. I think without seeing the image, no. But then that's like, you know, if a tree falls in the forest.
Sensory pleasures. Does that relieve the body or mind?
Sensory pleasure. Sensory pleasure, I think it affects the mind, right?
Does it relieve the body or the physical or mind? Sensory pleasure.
I'm trying to understand that question.
Sensory pleasure. Is it part of physical or is it part of mental?
It is part of physical, right? The five senses, right? So, you know.
So the pleasure, they're generated by five senses.
Right, yes.
Are they part of the physical or mental?
That would be part of the physical.
So then there is...
I think you destroyed my argument.
Yeah. So, that's why we debate.
Thank you so much. Because I'm trying to understand. I've been thinking about this and thinking about this. Yeah, so this is good. Yeah.
So like, you know, like... we need to analyze. Because
yeah.
You can just... like, you know, yeah. So I was wondering, like... Is there such a thing called physical pliancy?
Pliancy.
Physical pliancy.
Yeah. Physical pliancy. Yes, absolutely. Yeah, the mind is not static or stationary, right? The mind is pliant. Mm. It can change. The brain can also change according to. According to the mind, right? The mind can change the brain.
So now you think that there is such a thing called physical happiness?
I think I'm agreeing with you now. I think yes, because it makes sense to me the way you're explaining. Yeah.
That's why in the monastery we debate. You know, we debate. You say something, then they ask you some question, then you debate. You know, then that's why the debate is all about.
This is how we learn. Yeah.
But it's not just, you know, like what I said is not just what I say. It's not my personal opinions. It's coming from my study, you know, my knowledge, you know, based on Buddhism. So in text it says physical happiness, mental happiness. It says very clearly. So then we need to think,
mm-hmm.
What is physical happiness, what is mental happiness.
Yeah.
Oh. So then... physical happiness, if that refers to sensory pleasure, that's very temporary.
Mm-hmm.
It's not very unique of humans.
Right.
Even those animals, they are capable to get that.
Mm-hmm.
So now when it comes down to mental, so then that human has more capabilities, more has the capabilities to not necessarily looking at something or smelling something, touching something or eating something, just you can't. There's a way, another ways. We don't rely on object. You could still develop, you know, like do you call it pleasure or like whatever you call it, happiness. And so happiness is very deva. It's cultivating what's called deva. In Sanskrit, it's called sukh. Huh? What is called? Sukh. There's in Sanskrit what is called sukh. Sukhavati, there's like land of happiness. Sukhavati, land of happiness, sukh. So now, need to analyze what is really happiness. Is it just ideas? So I've been, you know, like, it's not the kind of happiness that you jump up and down like so, scream like, not that kind of happiness, you know. But still, it's, so now the question is what is happiness? So first thing is to identify what is happiness. So then cause. That's very, very important. Cause. What's the cause? So, did you say about cause?
Did I say about the cause?
Yeah, cause.
Well, last week I thought that the cause for physical happiness when we're able to satisfy our physical needs, then I thought, well, yes, then the body becomes happy. So I think that's the cause for happiness. I think even beyond that, what I discovered after studying Buddhism and practicing Buddhism, that the cause of happiness, and certainly is for me, being there for the sake of others, living my life for others, serving others, going to the prison and doing the work that I do for these guys, and for meeting people all the time and doing whatever I can to help them. That brings me so much happiness, happiness that I've never experienced in any other way.
Yeah, that sounds like mental happiness.
That's mental happiness.
Service for others.
It causes it. So I use this body, right?
To serve others.
To help others. I use my mind to help others. I use my speech to help others. This is how I try to live my life.
Do we agree? Cause of happiness for serve others. Huh? Do everybody agree?
Yeah.
Oh, so that's good. That's good. Now, service.
Service. Yeah.
Verbally, physically, mentally, service.
It was like 2008, I believe it was. I went. I was asked by Venerable Ravina to if I would go to the Happiness and Its Causes event in San Francisco and to speak about forgiveness and so I did. So they had all these people way beyond me in terms of intelligence and who studied this stuff, all these scientists and all these great people, and they were struggling trying to define happiness.
And
at the end of the day, it was living your life for the sake of others is the cause for happiness. And so so for me, like Rabina always says, take this as, you know, do your market research, he calls it, the scientific approach. So take this as your hypothesis, and then put it to the test, right? And so that's what I did, and I found that helped me to get over the death of my son, that helped me to have forgiveness and compassion for others, that helped me, if somebody's in my face and is rude to me, it helps me not get angry and rude back, but to see them as my teacher and be grateful for that. It's really helped me in so many ways, which helps me to stay happy in spite of my physical situation or whatever may happen. I am working on it. I still got a ways to go, but I've certainly seen the results. So to me,
I thought you are already enlightened.
No way at all. Yeah, if I ever think that, then I'm not.
So now the cherishing other is door to all the happiness.
Mm-hmm.
Cherishing others.
Cherishing others and not myself. Cherishing others. I think self-cherishing brings suffering.
What we need to do to remember that. So no, if like, and the question is, then why people don't take that very seriously, cherishing others. What needs to be done to encourage people to cherish, you know, other, you know, begin with your close one. That means like, you know, in Buddhism we say all sentient beings have happiness, cause of happiness. Many sentient beings, you are never going to have contact in this life. You know, they are like talking about just human, talking about 6 billion, number 6 billion. So out of 6 billion, how many you are going to have contact? Probably very little. So here, you know, that your friend, every day you live with, your partner, your wife, your husband, your family, these are the people you're around and have contact. So the cherishing others begin from there. So, but you know, it does require deeper understanding of reality, and you know, it requires a lot of knowledge. really understanding. Particularly if someone is being difficult, how you can change that? It's not easy. If someone is being difficult, being nasty, being grumpy, cranky, or there's so many words, I'm not sure, cranky, grumpy, or
grouchy,
you know, so whatever that. So that's the critical moment. How we help people to remind that cherishing any circumstance, not just when everything's going well, even like, especially when it's not everything's going well, cherishing is also still very important. So how we help people to take that very seriously. There's many things been said. Or people who's being mean to you, see that person as your one of your best teachers. Not easy. It's not easy. First, don't just get upset. That's the first step. Just forget about seeing that person as your best teacher. That's very hard things to do. It's something that you can do. Yeah, definitely you can do. You can do definitely. But what that requires? That requires in daily basis to remember that, and whatever ways through meditations, to reading something, or remembering something, or otherwise, you know, like it's very hard. So that's why daily practice, you know, become kind of like critical. So practice doesn't mean you just sit down, you know, then practice doesn't mean you sit down, say something, just being mindful. Read something, just being mindful. So otherwise, you know, it's hard. So so cause cherishing, why I should cherish. There's many questions probably arise. Each question needs to be answered one by one. You know, like so it seems like we all know the cause for happiness. So then why is so hard?
And actually doing it, you know, as you always say, to get it from here to here, that's really, really difficult. I mean, we know, right? It's like, it's kind of like, as you said last week, Shanta Davis says that we know we know the right things to do, but we know how to be free from suffering, but it seems like we just rush towards whatever.
What we should do. Just forget our religion. Just forget religion. What we should do. What's the best way to protect your peace of mind?
If I might say something. First of all, His Holiness the Dalai Lama said somewhere, I read that on the internet, he says, we people have a need to serve others. Now, I took care of my mom when she was totally disabled and all, and I think that was one of my happiest years. I was totally involved into serving, helping her. It gave me such, and she was not a good mother. I mean, she was anything but motherly and loving. But I got such joy out of my daughter and I always helping her. We did whatever we could to help her. People told us, you're crazy, you're going to break your back, half carrying her, this and that. But it was, I don't know what, but it made me so happy. Now, also, we know a young fellow who's years ago when I was young, he committed suicide. It was actually in the papers. They both took poison because he was of one religion. She was of another. The parents were against it. So the girl lived, but he died, and he was a medical student, very bright. So they went to the priest and said they were devastated. That was their only son. What the priest said is, find another young man who needs help, who has no parents, and help him. So that helps us. When we help others, it's just, we get gain great merit because we are so connected to others. It's like a rubber band that goes out there and comes right back to us. You help others. You must force yourself to have that kind of kindness. And my mom, at the end, when she was dying, she said, "How kind you are. You're my angel." Meanwhile, she was very abusive when I was a child. But for some reason, I felt great, great compassion for her. And I'm so happy. I would do it all over again. So this is, we just have to do it. Find someone who needs help, or even animals. I saw on TV a program about a woman, what's her name? She actually takes, Amanda, she takes care of animals that would be euthanized because they're missing limbs, they're blind, they're deaf. She takes them, she takes care of them. She has a whole many volunteers doing that. Ordinarily, they would all be put to death. And you could see when she talks on television, she gets such joy out of doing that, doesn't she? It's really wonderful to see. Thank you.
Very good, wonderful. Yeah. So now the first, then the first out of four practices, first one, cherish service for others. So Bob, that's the probably best way to put it there. So in here, Tibetan was called Sonam. Sonam is the kind of like energy you created by doing something positive. So cherishing service. So all my friend here, you come here every Sunday. So when you walk into this building, please remember, cherish service is door to all the happiness. So I myself try to remind myself every single day. So as a Buddhist monk, I say a lot of prayers, and I say the prayers and I think about. Even then, nothing is easy. But you can't stop. You can't give up because it never become easy. It never become easy. Or you can wait after 2 years, 2018, maybe 2019, it become easier. But that's not true. No, we need to try. Okay. So now the second. So then there's few minutes left. So there's out of four practice. The first one, Ramana, you find in the book. What's called? Okay, maybe later on, maybe next Sunday. Second one here now is called confession. Confession? How many of you believe in confession? Oh. You want to say something, please? No? Okay. So, so now question, okay, here, this second practice is called confession. Why? The question is why? Confession. What to confess? Physical difficulties, or what to confess? The confessions, the practice of confession. So, what needs to be confessed? Why? Why one needs to be confessed and how? For what? Probably I have four questions. First, what is confessions? Why you confess? What do you confess? For what? I have four questions. What is confessions? Why you confess? For what? How? Maybe you probably have more questions. So. Probably there could be more questions. So now first, what is confessions? What is confessions? Am I putting you in difficult positions? I beg you all the time to put question here. So now I don't see a question here. So now I start ask questions. Every week I beg you to put question here. So then maybe instead of reading a book, so then I can read question to ask you. So I have this work with what is confession? First, what is confession?
Geshe-la, just a thought in my head. I don't know if it's correct or not. I don't know if when you do something that you regretting what you did. So it comes to my mind almost like the karma, that when you do something and you have a strong feeling that it wasn't a good feeling inside, then you want to regret and also convince yourself not to do it again. So maybe the reason for that confession comes out of the fact that for many other faiths, I know that it is because it said you shouldn't do this or you did it. So it's a rules-oriented. But in my mind, you can sense when you've done something incorrect or you realize later on that that was not a good action, it may have consequences that you actually feel regret and you want to get it off your chest so that you can, it releases you a little bit. It's just a thought in my head.
Yeah, very good, very good. So it's not rituals.
Right.
It's not rituals. If you think it's a ritual, it's not rituals. Oh. So that's like the regret. All my friend here, that you should know, according to Buddhist purification practice, compassion practice, regret itself, not like all the regret, but regretting towards something negative, that is compassion. It's not rituals, that's part of your mind, that you regret. That purifies. So that is compassion, whether you talk to somebody or not, that's compassion. So that's very good. That's one part of, you know, kind of confession practice. Regret needs to be there. Regret has to be there. Then some kind of commitment, next second, next minute. You know, I'll stop screaming all the time. I'll stop yelling. You know, so, and I yell for every little things. I scream for every little things, and I raise my voice all the time, so probably I will. It's not very, it doesn't create nice atmosphere. My friend doesn't enjoy when I raise my voice. My dogs, they run away from me, so it's not good for, even the dog don't enjoy. So maybe I should think twice, maybe to minimize, maybe try, see. If you can stop 30 seconds, 1 minute, logically it doesn't make sense why you can expand. If you cannot stop, then you cannot stop even seconds. It's impossible. If you can control 30 seconds, 1 minute, you can control. That can be expanded. Logically, it doesn't make sense. Oh, so that's regret.
Geshe-la, I grew up with the idea of the external notion of confessing to God for sin, for evil, for doing wrong, and my understanding of the Dharma and my immersion in the Dharma for so long has made me reject both of those things, sin and God, insofar as the external God and the notion of good and evil, they don't make sense to me. And in my practice, it seems as though it's about recognizing non-virtuous behavior and really analyzing it and looking for a way out of that, saying, I got to stop doing this and minimizing the negativity. And I don't know if there's there's no entity out there to whom I'm praying or thinking about this. It's a matter of my own mind trying to improve it for the sake of other beings. So
yeah,
I'm so grateful for you and for the Dharma and for what I've learned and for having let go of a lot of negative notions that didn't make sense to me, and it just seems that the energy we create by recognizing non-virtuous behavior is entirely positive. It isn't self-flagellating and beating up on yourself, you know, it's a matter of just trying to get it right and be better.
The same time,
I didn't say be best, I said, you know, that's okay too.
The same time to recognize, you know, like not being free from samsara, everybody make a mistake. You are not the only one who's making mistakes. Everybody makes mistakes. You know, so nobody's perfect. So I think that knowledge needs to be there. It's important. It's not knowledge. Otherwise, you know, that could be another cause to beating yourself up. You know, or maybe like being very hard on yourself. True nature, there's something positive. His Holiness said, His Holiness, you know, having like meetings with the scientists almost now last 45 years, one scientist mentioned to His Holiness the baby. The scientist did some kind of experiment. they show different photos. Some photo about beating somebody or eating something. Even the children, they don't like. Show something beautiful, like somebody helping somebody, children kind of smiles. There, you know, now, this clearly shows that the very nature of the human nature is positive, it's good. As you could say, Buddha natures, because everybody, you know, but it's buried under the dirt. You can, this diamond, buried under the dirt, you can see. But you cannot say, oh, it's not there. It's there. It's only like you need to discover it's there. That's like, yeah, so if you, piece of gold, if you wrap into dirty clothes, throw somewhere there, nobody can see. It doesn't mean it's not there, it's there. It's like covered by the cloth. When you uncover the cloth, you see that that's exactly. So that's also something to, you know, all my friends, including myself, to remember, no, we are not, how is it, bad from nature. We are positive, we are, you know, like, we are good. We are good from the nature. So then everybody makes mistakes. But then now the question is, why confess? Why confess? So, yeah. No.
Confess because if you're carrying guilt around, and it's, if we carry guilt around, not just regret, but guilt, we feel bad about ourselves, like you say, beating ourselves up about something we did, we need to get rid of that. We need to let go of that. And so if we can confess that we did the thing, you know, that we regret it, we confess, we don't want to do it again. But I think there's something to sharing that with another person as well, because when we do that and the other person has compassion for us, and accepts us, then it helps us to accept ourselves and to let go of the guilt. And when we can let go of the guilt and put it behind us, then we can focus on positive things. When we're wrapped up in the guilt, it's just creating more and more negativity. So we have to let the guilt go. And by having someone else accept us and say it's okay. Sometimes people believe in like doing a penance for the bad thing, and for some people maybe if I do something then that helps me let go of the guilt, then that's fine too. Maybe that's not necessary, but whatever it takes to let go of the guilt and the hating yourself for what you did, that has to go away. And I think confessing to another person is valuable because they accept us, then we accept ourselves.
Very good, wonderful, very good, yeah, wonderful. So... yeah, so that's also part of the confession practice, you know, so that, yeah, one story like that, in Tibet we have, you know, like, Tibet is ruled by different kings. King. How is it, medieval? What do you call it?
Medieval
king? No, medieval, what do you mean? Medieval means evil, means bad?
No, medieval is a time period. I'm sorry, I misunderstood what you said.
Yeah, medieval, that evil doesn't mean bad. Yeah. So anyway, the Tibet, so we have this one king called Langtharma. According to history, the people believe that king has horn. Horn. So now see, some of you are aware, when the way Tibetan people show respect, not nowadays, you know, but in Tibet, but you still see them, they go like this. They kind of scratch their hair and they stick out their tongue. Not in like movie, but the movie they're kind of exaggerated, like not like that, but you know, you see they stick out their tongue a little bit. That means now it's become like kind of showing respect. But actually that's not what happens in histories. So when you go to see important peoples, so you scratch your hair, then you're kind of proving that you don't have horn. You don't have horn, you know. Instead of, okay, saying, I don't have gun, so then, you know, go to the machine, then, you know, that allows you. Then you say, there's no horn. Then sticking out your tongue, it means that you don't practice black magic. And people sometimes, when they practice black magic, you see this kind of like unique mark on their tongue. Unique mark. So then you stick out your tongue, then they kind of clarify, oh, you don't have horn, you are not practicing black magic, now you are not threat, now you can go. Now there is no letter on bigger part of it, no, like showing respect. That's not actually what happened in the history. So there's king called Lang Tharma, according to the histories, then that king has, that king was very evil, you know, destroying like against any like as a religious belief on people who practicing Buddhism. He persecuted all of them, killed them and all of them, you know. So and one lady, I'm not sure how much truth in that story, but anyway, one lady saw that he has horn, actually literally saw, and she was so afraid of talking about that, and she kind of hide it. It become sickness. Went to some talk to somebody, and somebody said, "Oh, you are hiding something. In you need to please speak out, huh?
Speak up
or tell." And then that person suggests her to go to the jungle in Tibet. We have many bamboo. And told her to just imagine that you are telling everybody, shouting bamboo, whatever is inside there, just shout it. Shout it in the bamboo, so then it gets out. Just think that you are telling everybody, just shout it in the bamboo really loudly. And probably she did. Oh, Lang Tharma has horn on his head. Said that. And after that, she recovered. So then you see the corn shell, corn shell, tungi naza puny cells. Corn shell also, that's called, that's the blockage. Yeah, something that blocks in the blockage in the corn shell, that's considered as a sickness of the corn shell. That's considered as sickness of corn shell. So that sickness can only be healed if you blow. If you blow, then just goes out. Tungi naza puny, same. Somebody here, what she said, needs to say. Tungi naza puny, say. So, that's why I think exactly what happened in the church. Not in church, in every major religion, traditions. The church, probably there's somebody sit there, then you tell them what happens. So that's the beginning of, according to the confession practice, which is exists in Buddhism, that's the beginning of the step. First, toll. Or toll means say. You know, in monastery we do that. And then you know, like every month there's two confession practice that takes place in the monastery. So then you go there. So if you are sick, there's somebody comes to your room. That's like now long time ago. Now those practices have been not kind of like deteriorated. Anyway, Buddha's lifetime, that somebody comes to your room, then you're supposed to tell that person, you know, what went wrong physically, mentally, verbally. So you tell that person, so that person goes back to the congregations, because you are sick, you can't come physically, cannot come. So that person like stand up in front of all the person, then he's not going to say your name, but say, oh, from the east side of the monastery, so and so, has something to confess like this and this. You don't say name. You say, from the east side of the monastery, somebody say something like that. Then, you know, then, in a long time ago, you're supposed to say, that become problems. But maybe people don't want to do. People don't want to say, or maybe some people are embarrassed and don't say. So then, you know, you kind of visualize. Visualize your saying. Visualize. So, or maybe somebody who has a lot of friends or a lot of students did something wrong. So all the students don't want him to say something in front of all the big congregations. Become kind of embarrassing. So anyway, there's a lot of things kind of deteriorated, you know. Not the people change, not that itself change, but people change. People don't like, oh, I don't like this, maybe just set aside, maybe something. No, so then it becomes kind of like that. Even the Vinayaka practice kind of deteriorates. Anyway, so that's the beginning that you seriously, you then have to get it out. Get it out. Out of your system, so that then feels good. So, so now why we confess? Because the whole harboring, like some feeling that hurts yourself, is not good. It's not good feeling. Maybe people have different reasons. Maybe some people out of fear that something is going to happen when I die, so I better confess, purify now. Or some people, you know, they're not worried about next life. They just worry about this life. I don't want to hide something that really bothers me all the time, so I better get it out. So that's now the kind of like the answer to the question why we confess. Are you getting bored?
No. I was just thinking about.
Want to hear from you? That's good things, no?
I was just thinking about like what is really the foundation, or what's the bottom reason that we confess, and why is it part of every religion that I've ever known about, and even part of if we're not part of a religion, why do we feel like we need to confess? And I think that the very bottom reason is that it makes us think about, sort out in our minds, what are the thoughts and behaviors that are good or right versus that are not good or wrong. So, like, so we think, I need to confess. Well, what kind of thing? What do you want to confess? Mm-hmm. Well, we want to confess the things that are negative or hurt ourselves or others. And so in order to do that, you have to sort out, well, what are my behaviors and what are my thoughts and which ones are the good ones and which ones are the bad ones? And the ones that are bad, why are they bad? You know, because they made me feel uncomfortable, because they made someone else feel uncomfortable. So I think that's the bottom reason for wanting to confess, whether you're in a faith system that just says you're confessing to a God or you're confessing to another person. You know, it just forces you to study your behaviors and which are right and which are wrong and why are they right and wrong.
Yeah, that's very good. That's all based on your feelings. It's all based on your feelings. You know, we have feelings. It doesn't mean somebody you believe in something that you are feeling, somebody who doesn't believe in anything that you don't have feelings. Not like that. Everybody has feelings. And everybody likes to have good feelings. Nobody likes to have bad feelings. So that's, I think, the fundamental things why I say it's not just, of course, every major religion traditions talk about confessions, but that's not the religious things. It's for the sake of your own happiness. Sake of your own happiness. So, you know, cleaning dishes has nothing to do with religions. Regardless if you believe in religion or not religion, you need to clean your dish. So if you use water, then you have to clean. It's not like if you believe in religion, you have to clean. If you don't believe in religion, then you don't need to clean. It's not like that. Everybody needs to clean. Doesn't matter. If I use one, I have to clean. If you use one, you need to clean. No. There's a way to clean. And there's so much different stuff that helps you to clean. So no, it's about all about cleaning. Cleaning or for sake of feeling good or like or sake of your own happiness. So then the interesting part is like then in the end you feel good. Instead of feeling bad. Yeah, you used to feel bad. Now instead of feeling bad you feel good. Why? Because you feel like you did something. Before you did nothing. Now you feel like you did something. Or maybe you said, you told somebody. Now you feel like you did something. Or that doing something can be many things. Telling someone, asking someone or someone forgiveness. It can be many things. Or maybe regret. That means you did something. So that's why you feel good. But doing nothing doesn't feel good. Well, that's why, you know, why confess? Why confess? Oh? Why confess? And then you feel something good.
I think when you confess, so, you know, when you keep something that you've done wrong inside of you, you know, it kind of goes back to we're inherently good. And if we've done something wrong that we feel is wrong, you know, it festers inside of you and it's very isolating. And when you confess to someone, you acknowledge that you need community and you're speaking to your community and you're opening your heart to your community, that they'll accept you even though you've done this wrong thing. So I just think it just seals that that need for community around you.
Very good. So, Andrea, you want to say something?
Actually, I have a question. Just questions keep coming to my mind all the time. So I get this, we confess to everybody, we want to get it out, right? But how do we distinguish that between just complaining? You know, people complain all the time. I got a lot of stuff that I could just, people ask me, how am I doing? And I always say, well, everything is good. I'm doing well, unless you want to hear something, right? You know, because I got some stuff, but I don't want to complain. And so, so my question is, I think that there's a fine line there sometime, you know. And sometimes we like to have people who agree with us, and so we get what we call in this country pity parties, you know, pity parties.
Pity party.
Pity party. Yeah, you know, it's like got other people who I'm hurting, and then someone they come back with, well, I'm hurting, and then everybody's just sitting around and just complaining about their situation.
Oh, that's called pity party.
Pity party. Yeah, you know. I do some work with restorative justice, and these people have lost loved ones, and they get together, and you talk about what happened in your life, right? You're not supposed to talk until a stick or something is passed around, then it's your turn to talk, right? But they go on and on and on and on, and I see no resolution sometime, right? I've known people 20 years still talking about the same thing, no resolution. And so my question is, because I think there's a fine line there. Sometimes we think we're confessing, but actually we're just just complaining. And I want to make sure that I'm not complaining to anyone about anything. But sometimes I have stuff on my chest, right? I need to get it out. So do we do that in private sometime?
Question for everybody.
I'm going to take this one. Because I think confession is very different from complaining. Complaining is sort of like, I don't like what's going on and it's making me uncomfortable. And confession is, I know I've done something and I need to resolve what I've done. Not, you know, everybody out there is making me miserable, but I've made my own self miserable and I need to resolve it. So I don't see even a fine line. I see like a chasm.
This whole discussion has made me think about there's a practice that I'm tried to do daily, and it involves three questions to myself. And it starts out with, what have I given that day? What have I received? And the best one is, where have I caused trouble? And that's usually if I have done something negative or something along the day happened like that. And so it gives me a chance to really see it in black and white on the paper. And I've got some trusted friends that we do this for each other, is talk about these situations. So it's like instead of really complaining, we are laying out what we feel responsible for. And in this feedback, it's not so much that we're telling each other what to do, but it's like asking questions and digging down. And my interest is really to dig down and find out if there's been a disturbing thought of what's really behind it for me, because we find that each other has our own, you know, experience and differences of why that came up. And the great thing about it is that when I find out that I first can feel it when it's happening, sometimes when I have a disturbing thought, so it's a little bit easier. But at the end of this research project is that I have a new idea that kind of clears away, and the old idea kind of drops off, and I feel a lot lighter.
Mm.
That's some of the process
that I'm working on. Yeah, very good. So you say like what I receive, what I give, then another one?
Where have I caused trouble?
Where have I caused trouble? Yeah. No, so like, but this is not written exactly in the book like that, but that's wonderful. What I receive, what I give in, what has caused trouble, you know? So that's also very practical practice, very good. Yeah. Okay, so now time is over. So I wish you all a, you know, happy Merry Christmas and holiday. I will celebrate my Christmas on the bed. then wish you all the best for the Christmas holiday. You know? Yeah, good. So maybe more discussion like this, you know, it will help us, all of us, to think. That's how we solve problems. We have to think. Not just talk. We have to think. That's how all the problems will be solved. That's how you will, you know, be liberated by thinking, you know, thinking all different kind of angles, thinking, you know, like prioritize what's most important, sort it out from all different kind of angles and think thoroughly, not just think thoroughly. You know? So, then, you know, as you said, you know, you need to tell yourself, my dear friend, that life is not going to be free from complaint. No, that's always something to complain, and it also depends on what kind of complaint, you know. So, but, you know, that's why I'm saying, think. When you're reciting mantra, you need to think. If you don't just think, you know, just reciting, not much benefit. You know, so saying prayer, same thing. If you don't think, not much benefit. If you think, there's a benefit. If you think, brother has to be prayer. Like what she said, what I receive, what I give, what I cause trouble. Just that, you know. Just that, you know. So it's not labeled as a mantra. It's not labeled as a prayer, but it's very practical thing. So bottom line, including myself, we are because the kindness, compassion, loving, care. That takes our problems, okay? Thank you. So, time's over.
Okay, well, go to page 191, and we're going to start with praises to the 21 Taras to fulfill the wish Lama Zopa Rinpoche, to remove obstacles to the next light of the path retreat. Three more sublime abode at the Potala. O Tara born from the green letter Tam, your crown adorned with Amitabha, action mother of the Buddhas of the three times, Tara, please come with your attendants. The gods and demigods bow to your lotus feet, O Tara, you who rescue all heart destitute. To you, Mother Tara, I pay homage. O my prostrate to the noble transcendent liberator. Homage, Tara, sister, heroic, I like my thing instantaneous. Sprung from opening stamens of the Lord of Fear, Rose, Turban, Lotus. Homage, she whose face combines a hunter, daughter, moon's bullet, blazing with white rays resplendent as a thousand star collection. Homage, golden, blue, and lotus.
waterborne and Hannah Dorn and giving up with promiscuity, patience, meditation, her sphere, homage, crown of Tata Gatas, action, triumph without limit, relied on my conqueror's children, having reached every perfection, homage, failing with the Tata, whom desire direction and space, traveling with their feet the seven worlds, able to dwell for homage, worship by the All Lord, Shaka Ani Bamamara, honored by the host of spirits, corpses of Gandhava's Yakshas, homage with the triumphant sound, destroying both magic diagrams, her feet pressing left out right, and blazing in a raging fireplace, homage to the very dreadful, destroyer of Mara's champions, she with frowning lotus visage, who is slayer of all enemies, homage at the heart her fingers, or on her Rithrijo Mudra, lightly masses all excited, all directions to the door. Homage, she's so joyous, radiant, crown emitting garlands of light, mirthful laughing with Tutare, subjugating Mara's David. Homage, she able to summon all Earth Guardians assembly, shaking, frowning with her home sign, saving from every misfortune. Homage, crown adorned with crescent, moon on her most shining, Amitabha in her hair knot, sending out much light eternal. Homage, she mystery the blaze, like the unending fire abiding, righteous weapons joints around you, troops of enemies destroying. Homage, she who strikes the ground with her palm and with her foot beats it, scowling with the letter whom the seven levels she just conquered. Homage, happy, virtuous, peaceful, she who feels the peace nirvana, she endowed with soul and soul, destroyer of the great evil. Homage, she with joy surrounded, tearing both bodies asunder, faces moon of knowledge mantra, arrangement of the ten letters, homage to her received letter, of the shape of syllable, whom Bhapasanthic shapes the three worlds, Meru, Mandara, and Vindhya, homage holding in their hand the hair-like moon of Deva life form, with white soap and Tara Mpe, totally dispelling poise, homage whom gods and their king, send the kinaras to honor, armored in our joyful splendor, she dispels their dreams and conflicts. Homage, she who's to light bright with radiance of sun and full moon, with Aitara and Tutare, she dispels severe contagion. Homage, full of liberating, fired by the set of three natures, Yoshas of the spirits, Yakshas, and race corpus, Supine Ture. These phrases with the root mantras and prostrations of Star 21. I'll go back to page 190. And we'll read the prayer of the benefits. Whoever is endowed with devotion for the goddess and recites this with supreme faith, remembering it at dawn upon waking in the evenings, will be granted all fearlessness, will perfectly pacify all negativities, and will eliminate all unfortunate migrations. The multitudes of conquerors will quickly grant initiation. Thus endowed with this greatness, one will eventually reach the state of a Buddha. If affected by the most terrible poison, whether ingested, drunk, or from a living being, just by remembering will one be thoroughly cleansed. If this prayer is tried at 2, 3, or 7 times, will pacify all the sufferings and torments caused by spirits, fevers, and poison, and by other beings as well. If you wish for a child, you will get a child. If you wish for wealth, you will receive wealth. All your wishes will be fulfilled, and all obstacles satisfied. Now go to page 246 for the dedication prayer. May all beings everywhere, plagued by sufferings of body and mind, obtain an ocean of happiness and joy by virtue of our merit. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled with a mind weighed down by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food. May the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness, and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvests. May all medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be free from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid, and those bound be freed, and may their powerless find power, and may people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space remains, for as long as sentient beings remain, until then may we too remain to dispel the miseries of the world. And now the short, long life prayers, two on 244 and 245. In the land encircled by snow mountains, you are the source of all happiness and good. All-powerful Chenrezig, Tenzin Gyatso, please remain until samsara ends. The one who mastered speech at a very young age, the one of great patience who received the name Avatara, the one with great precision who spread the teachings of Lama Tsongkhapa on bliss and void, Lama Ornama, the yellow hat tradition, please remain until samsara ends. You uphold the subduer's moral way, who serve as the bountiful bearer of all, sustaining, preserving, and spreading Manjana's victorious doctrine, who masterfully accomplished magnificent prayers, honoring the three jewels, savior of myself and others, your disciples, please, please smile upon. Om Taritu Taritude Soha. 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 Om Taritu Taritude Soha.
So, just a few things for the annual appeal. I just want to make sure that you're aware of the two pledges that are out there. There's the Vajrapani pledge. So any of those who give over $2,000, 2,000 or more, will be entered into win 4 days at a private retreat in California at Vajrapani. And then those who are ready to be non-procrastinators, we have the procrastinator pledge going on right now. So we have $7,175 on the table. And so for those of you who want to continue to maybe increase their giving still or haven't given yet, that's on the table. There's an ornament out front, too, for you that we give away every year. And I have just a quick thing I'd like to present to you. It's a, not present, but a show and tell. So this is me taking off my center manager hat, and I'm just putting on the Jill hat. So I don't come to you ever for the annual appeal for, as myself, as Jill, so I'm going to do that today. So I'm a little emotional. We've lost another friend. So this is really tough. Would you open that for me? So a long time ago when I started here, I went to Geshe-la and I said, there was a consecration, sorry, for our statue. So I had this little statue. Do you remember the little Buddha, Miranda, that was like a Pottery Barn display in our rocks? We weren't Buddhists yet. And so, you know, we just have these Buddhas around our house because we thought they were kind of cool. So I went to Geshe-la, and I thought, this one's hollow, so I can get it filled. And it was cracked and kind of coming apart. It was $4.99 on sale at Tuesday morning. And so I said, Geshe-la, can I use this? And he said, it is broken, Jill. And I know he's smiling inside. And I said, I'll fix it. I'm an artist. I have glue. And so I went home, and I said, I'll glue it together. And he said, the face needs to be painted, Jill. It was just this bronze statue. And I said, I'm an artist. I can do that. So I glued it, and I painted it. And it, if you don't mind me saying, it looked like a mixture of the Joker meets Siddhartha. And it was very, very unattractive. And we're not supposed to place judgments on the Buddha, but I'm like, okay, this isn't going to work for my altar. So I went back to Geshe-la, and I said, or somebody, maybe Donna, and said, how do I fix this? So there was this guy named John Pell, who's right there. And he, and I didn't have a dime. I didn't have any money. So I gave him $15, and he painted this, and he made it look like that. Do you remember filling that? So now it's consecrated and filled. So my Tuesday morning statue is now, it always was holy, but now it's more holy. So moving along my career, that's in 2008. I kept talking about mandala offerings. I saw that happening in LOP, and I didn't know what they were doing, and they kept pouring this rice and these sounds, and I'm like, what are they doing? This is such a cool thing. So I thought you had to have a tantric initiation, and you didn't. So apparently I kept asking about it, and I didn't really know I was doing that. So one day, Lamala, she went, so she's got robes on. I'm like, what? And she just walked out the door. Do you remember that? And you walked out the door, and you sat me down. You had prepared this, and you just, this was out of the blue, and she said, here's how you do a mandala offering. And she just put me at the table, and she just had the paperwork in front of me, and she started doing it, and I went, cool. Thank you. And so she did that for me. She just gave that to me. But I wasn't asking for that. And someone else, I didn't have a set, so Venerable Tendrin gave me her set, which, and it's Miranda's now, this a beaded set. And we have a little plate here that we used from her China set when she was a little girl. So now I have a mandala set, so I'm cooking with gas. So we're doing mandala offerings, and then one day Donna came up to me, and I went out of the blue and said, I'd like to offer you something special from someone who passed away. And so she gave me Venerable Chune's mandala set. So I didn't ask for any of that. So now I've got this mandala set that you saw me use maybe a couple Sundays ago. So I'm like building my altar. I don't have any of these things. And eventually, when there was a Sarah J. auction, I for my birthday, I purchased a very large Buddha that Geshe had already filled. So I gave myself an amazing present with a very large Buddha, but he's still on my altar too. So then we go forward in time, and this is a Dorjane Bell. So I used to work for Susan and Richard and took care of her mother when she was passing. I still didn't have any money at all. I'm taking care of my father and my daughter. And Miss Richard. So, sorry. This is just going to be personal. So they gave me a gift card for my birthday. And Richard said, are there any children in here right now? Richard said, no, damn it. I want you to go to do something for yourself with this money. Don't buy something for your daughter or your father. I want you to do something for yourself. And I said, okay, you know, I'm thinking movie, massage. And I walked through a couple weeks later, I walked through the bookstore, and there was this Dorjane Bell set for the exact money in my gift card. And I went, awesome. So I buy the Dorjane Bell, and I tell Richard, and he's like, damn it. Excuse me. But he said, why didn't you get something for yourself? And I went, I can bring my own Dorjane Bell to a puja. That's amazing. So I was just, and he's like, oh, for God's sake. So it was really sweet. So we move on in time, and I still don't have really any money. And someone's wife that's in the room who's not here today said, I think we're having a visioning meeting. And she said, I don't know what came up, but she said, well, Jill's broke, and she's happy. It's like, that's a little personal. And so I walked outside later, and she grabbed my arms, and she said, I'm really sorry. That was, like, really personal. And I said, I don't mind. I mean, I tell everybody everything. I'm fine with that. And she just grabbed my hands, and she said, you do know that we're never going to let anything happen to you, right, that we're always here for you. And so that meant the world to me. Everybody's crying now. And so later I started giving to schools that your guy's daughter goes to. The school is a charter school, so it's broke. So now I have a little more money, so I give $50, and I'm like, good for you, Jill. And I realized I spent more on gum that year than I spent on giving to the school. I'm like, that's not really very generous. So since I don't have a lot of money, I'm thinking maybe I should start practicing more generosity. And it doesn't just mean money. So I started being more generous with my time, with my thoughts, with anything I could think of. Like, how can you be generous with everything that you've got in any way you can? I don't think I've ever left this center after that without a gift. Something's always on my... One day, Dakini Power was on my desk. I don't know who did that, but I, you know, people... Now the giving is turning around. And so I was driving Geshe-la one time, a long time ago, and he said, do you mind me doing an impersonation of you? Do you mind me speaking like you? Okay, he said, you. And I'm driving, right, so I'm looking this way, and he's here, and I'm really careful. And he said, are you always this happy? And I thought, I have been so depressed in my life and so much anxiety. And I said, yeah, you know, unless I'm crying, and right now I'm crying from joy. I said, I'm pretty happy. And so then I'm just driving along. It's pretty joyful to be with Geshe-la in the car. And I said, you know, this stuff really works. Talking about the Dharma, and I said that to my teacher. This stuff really works. And I know I feel like he's smiling, and he said, yes, Jill, it does. Do you remember that? A long time ago. So I just wanted to say, are you giving from your heart? I give to the center. I don't give $50, and I don't give $100. I don't give $500. I give till it hurts a little bit, till equals maybe a tiny little vacation. Because he is telling us not just how to be happy, not just how to not to suffer. He's saying, here's how you get enlightened, Jill. Here's how you get enlightened, Chase. Karen, here's how you get enlightened. Tim, Susie, Marion, Steve, Donna, Alex, Sandra, I don't know your name, Barry, Jumpel, everybody. Gene, this is how you get enlightened. He's sitting right here in this chair and he's telling us, and we're like, okay, thanks. I got to go shopping now. You know, we're going shopping after this. So I'm just coming from my heart. This is it today. I knew not many people would be here, so I thought I'll take today. She's next week. And I just wanted to offer that. Are we giving in every way, in-kind donations, service? He just told us that makes us really happy. So he's given us another clue in the game, and financially. So that's all.